It's time for the podcast. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hello, everybody. It's Jane Hamill, and welcome to this episode. I am psyched because I have a super cool, fun lady on the line here, and it's Frances Harder from Fashion for Profit and Fashion Business, Inc. Frances, can you hear me now?
I certainly can.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you? A bit warmer than you, I think.
I know, it's 2 degrees in Chicago today, so.
Oh, I think it's only about 70, I think.
No. Oh, yeah, okay.
But it's going to rain.
So there's that, and I'm a little jealous. But today I am psyched, guys, because our topic today is international companies wanting to enter the U.S. market with their product. And Frances was my go-to person when I decided I wanted to do this topic. I'm not an expert in this at all. I'm psyched to learn a lot today. So Frances, let's kick it off and start with you telling us, you know, for the three people listening who don't know who you are, who are you and what do you do?
Well, I'm obviously from England. So Manchester, England originally, and was in the apparel industry for many years and teaching and designing, and realized that there was a lack of business skills and founded the FBI in 1999. Can't believe how long it is. Also authored the book Fashion for Profit, now in its 10th edition. In the meantime, I've been really fortunate to travel around the world and have an opportunity to work and be invited by the United Nations and working in Peru and Nepal. And in between times, I had my name under license in Japan and worked for the Sultan of Brunei, and all these other amazing opportunities. You find yourself in different parts of the world and you're wondering, how the hell did a girl from England get there, or Manchester?
That is awesome. And your work with Fashion Business Inc., what do you guys do there?
Well, it's an educational nonprofit at 501c3. And we provide business development, and we do webinars and seminars, and we also do retraining through the generosity of one of our sponsors, and we help people get retrained who've been laid off, particularly in skills. Usually it's flat pattern makers, Jane, who have the skills in flat pattern making, but they don't have the skills in computer-aided sort of solutions that they need these days in order for them to get jobs.
Yeah.
So we've been very fortunate to recognize the need for that and also get sponsorship to provide that to these people, certified job training.
That's so awesome. You guys do a ton. So we'll link it up in the show notes back on the Fashion Brain Academy blog after this interview, guys, if you need to find Frances too. All right. So let me tell you an email I got the other day. Hi, Jane. My name is blank and I'm from blank. In this case, it was Denmark. We are having some success over here in Europe and we'd like to enter the US market. Can you help us do that? What's the first thing we should do?
So first thing to realize is the size of America. So when people from Denmark or from Europe say, how do you enter the American market? The first thing is it's not one market. You're talking about 50 states. And each state, like California, you can fit England into it 3 times. So you really have to understand the size of America and understand the various different markets within America, because she's from Sweden or Denmark. And so obviously she's been successful in Europe. And coming from Europe, I know, and lived in Germany. Germany has a look. England has a look. And so and she probably recognizes what sells well in certain parts of Europe. Mm-hmm. But she needs to come over and understand the American market. Because you know, Jane, when you were creating products and I'd be sitting and being a designer and the buyer would say, so, okay, you're here designing in California. What are you doing for Dallas? What are you doing for Miami?
Absolutely.
So these are the important points that you need to certainly understand is the size and the demographics of America.
Okay, so say you're this person and you feel like you have some legs, right? Like this is starting to work. And you say, all right, the first step is to come over to the US. What does that look like? What would you tell them to do exactly?
Well, of course, you know, everybody goes to New York and that's always exciting and very different. But then I would say come over too. If you can do it, just do a, I do, drove across America. It's just amazing to do that if you've got the time. But of course, if they're in business and they're making money, then I would fly New York, Miami, probably Dallas, LA, Seattle, San Francisco. I mean, these places are all markets on their own, aren't they, Jane? You know that. So yeah. When you're designing and you're thinking of the American market, you know, when I did a line with Priscilla Presley and it was for home shopping. Well, we knew that the customers buying this was in Middle America. Okay, so I don't want to be rude, but Middle America, you at that time tended to think maybe they're couch potatoes or something.
At that time, you mean like yesterday, dude?
This was probably 20 years ago. You know, you're thinking about and Priscilla is like 100 pounds wet. So we've had to make clothes that look good on her with the idea that eventually they'll be selling to this market in Middle America, which would probably be on the bigger demographic side.
Right.
So we actually made everything in bias cut and we had less elastic in the back. So there was a way for it to expand and it sold out. We sold out twice in the middle of the actual show. So, you know, understanding your market is key. It's not just about designing for America. And it's not just about designing these days when I say to people, and I know you do, so who are you designing for? And they say, well, I'm designing for 20-year-olds to 35 or 45-year-olds. And go, oh, right, okay. So that means after that age, you're just not going to allow people to buy it. It's just silly to talk like that these days because you know that mothers and daughters, it's about a lifestyle. And it's about what they wear and how active they are. And, you know, I know my daughter and myself, you know, we both like the same similar clothes. So it's about a lifestyle and demographics more than about age demographics.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, and it's, so what's so interesting is this advice needs to be spoken loudly to every designer on the planet. I can't tell you how many times they say, I want to get into more stores. And I say, go on the road, go visit the stores first. And right. There is such pushback on that. Mm-hmm. I don't have time. I just want to get a wrap.
Right.
I don't want to sell it myself. Like there's so many reasons that they don't want to just, you know, walk in the store and say, hey, I'm Jane and I have this collection and I'm just saying hello and I want to check out your store.
Right.
Oh, cool. You know?
Well, I think a lot of it also is that they don't like to be rejected. And so they're expecting the salesperson, you know, to come along and save them. But I say the same thing, Jane. I say, go in, see what they say, have a Teflon coat. So if someone looks at it, they go, oh my God, I'd never buy that. You know, they have to understand that, you know, rather than saying, oh, but I'm the creative designer of this, you know, it's they have to understand it's business. It's about making money. And when they go in, expect to be rejected, learn by it. What have they got to tell you? What is wrong with your product so that you can learn by it?
You know, what we do in one of my courses about getting into stores is we role play, like we practice it and I lay it on them, you know, and,
yeah.
And if, you know, you get used to it, but it's super hard in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one of the designers I worked with, I said, so when you first started calling stores, was it hard? She goes, it was awful. It was like the scariest, worst thing I ever did. And then after about the 30th call, I forgot all about it. I just pick up the phone. I don't even care. So,
right.
You know, yeah, it takes time. Okay.
Well, and also you need to know your script. And I tell them too, when they go into a store, if they do get an appointment, make sure that, you know, you've got decent hangers, none of the bloody wired hangers and stuff like that. And make sure you've merchandised the product so that you can show it in a way that they all relate to one another. And so that the buyer will relate to it too. And then eventually the customer and they will buy it. But not the items all, you know, one t-shirt, here's two t-shirts. And you got to have merchandise product.
Great, excellent advice. Okay, so let's say you're this woman, you're in Denmark. You have merchandise, excellent product. You've worked on that. You actually did come to the U.S. and you flew to four cities and you felt like, okay, I think I fit, you know, here. I'm more in the Southeast or something, let's say, right? What's your next move? You're living in Europe, but you want to sell here. What would you tell them to do next?
Well, once you got an idea of how you should be putting together a line, whether which would include maybe New York, Southwest, and Northwest, then maybe you have to identify which type of trade show you need to go to. Or would you find a distributor? Sometimes we have one of our, we just did a little tour, and Peter Jacobson, who's here, he's a distributor for French lines, and he found them and then, you know, took them on and distributes for them. Maybe this Danish company, if they're doing well in Europe, maybe they find a distributor who would take it on, who understands the American market, who would then take on the product. They choose the product, buy the product, and warehouse the product, and then, you know, pay the manufacturer. That's one way to go. But if you find, say, someone like Sheila, right, Trish, mm-hmm. she reps what?
Italian.
Yeah. Is she a distributor?
She's a distributor.
So she does the same thing. Yeah. So they need to probably find out whether or not finding a distributor would be the answer to their problems besides finding a rep.
Yeah. Okay. So by the way, hi, Trish. And Trish Concannon is the director of the board. Trish, how do you describe yourself?
Besides being gorgeous?
Oh. Besides, like, awesome as hell, honestly.
I'm the executive director here. So I run all the operations and the scheduling and the, you know, basically all the programming and so forth. So trying to keep things moving along.
So when I go out to trade shows and whatever and run into you guys, Trish and Francis from Fashion Business Inc., my day is complete because you guys are just fun and good to be around. Like, I always love seeing you.
The feeling's mutual, Jane. Yeah, you're fantastic.
Yeah. We have a good little thing going. Okay. Yeah. So let me talk about like someone like Sheila, whoever this person is. So you want to get a distributor. Is the distributor located in the U.S. or the distributor
is here? Yeah, they're located here, and they act like a sales rep. They will go and see the stores, but they buy the product and from the manufacturer. They know, they choose the products that they want to sell. And so in a way, you know, they're really helped because they can say, look at the Danish line and go, you know, this is not going to go well in America. We, you know, it's more European. We'll take this piece, we'll take that piece, but we're not going to be taking some of these others. So they understand the market.
Yes.
Which is really good.
And they're also taking on all of the logistics of that product, the shipping and the, you know, the customs and all that. So the distributor is buying the product from the manufacturer and handling all of the rest versus a sales rep who is selling the product for the manufacturer and just earning a commission off of the sales.
Right. And everybody who contacts me is like, I want a distributor because you don't want them to buy it up front and just deal with one customer.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So the path to finding a distributor, can we talk about that for a minute?
Well, I think the distributors probably find the manufacturers from my experience is. So whether or not the Danish company, you see, I think they've got to still come over here and maybe find out which trade shows, whether it's Coterie or whether they have to go to the ridiculousness of Vegas with Magic. You know, it's identifying, first of all, the type of trade show that their product would sell in. Also, the types of stores, and they could always work backwards. Maybe they would go into a store, even if it was Neiman Marcus or Bloomingdale's, and see if the buyer's there and say, which shows do you go to? Is there a way I can, you know, work backwards to working with the buyers within the store? Mm-hmm. And see if they could connect to the right people, or just finding out feedback from these stores. Obviously, you walk in there and say, I need the buyer. Well, not necessarily the buyer's not going to be there, but you could, before you come, do some investigation and find out who the store buyers are for Neiman Marcus and maybe set up an appointment. I know that you probably know anyway, Bloomingdale's, don't they have once a year, they see new designers or twice a year?
Yeah, they have go-sees or open calls or whatever. Yeah. So so a lot of this prep work could be done from home, from whatever country they're in, right? And so let's say they have some cash and they're, obviously you need to have some cash if you're going to be doing this,
yeah.
Right? So, and you say, all right, I'm going to do, let's take Coterie because it's a little, it's slightly less overwhelming compared to Magic. Although maybe not. So you're willing to spend like the 10 grand on a trade show, but you're from a completely different country and nobody knows you, right? What would be your first couple steps like for them to prep to do their first show?
Well, actually, I don't know whether, I think the first thing I would do is go and visit it and sort of understand where you would be if you wanted to show there, because as you know, they're so big, Jane, that sometimes they'll stick you next to the ladies' toilet, or, you know, you don't know where you're going to be. So I would say go and understand, is this the dynamics of the show that I want to be in? And maybe when you walk the show, you'll find people who are distributors for international brands, and then maybe start a dialogue, bring lots of marketing material with you. The other thing is to connect with their consulates, their Danish consulates, and find out if they got contacts here to people who are distributors or who, you know, could help them sell. Because oftentimes that's what these consulates do, is to help certain countries export. Like we go to US Trade and Commerce and they help companies here export to different countries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, it's amazing that that's so obvious, and yet I don't know if I would have thought of that, you know, like,
yeah,
of course you go to your consulate, you know. And yeah. So what I suggest people often do is contact stores before, send them things in the mail, email, whatever, and say, you know, come see me at the show. Is there anything you'd add to that or differ from that, or like sneaky little tricks to get people to stop by your booth? Because when you're new, you know, they're not that interested. They're busy with their lines that they have.
Right. And another thing, you don't want to be on your iPhone sitting in your booth and eating. And, you know, it's just people are just not going to go. And you've got like 3 seconds to connect.
Yeah.
So whether you're giving something away or whether, you know, you're gorgeous and you can stand there and attract people, there's got to be something where you can, you know, or you're, you know, very gregarious like you, and hi, how are you? Have you seen my line? You know, if they got a problem speaking English, then they're going to have a problem. Mm-hmm. You've seen that before. You know, they can't even speak the language that they're trying to, the country they're trying to sell into. So it's obviously they need to understand how, and also merchandising their booth. And so that it's not a big mishmash of products like you see many times, and if people just walk right straight by, they have to identify and merchandise the products within the booth that people will stop and go, oh, that looks good. Yeah. Remember, a buyer in a store wants to buy and show the stuff in the store, so the customer, as we've got today, know trends. So basically it's all about merchandising yourself, isn't it?
It so is. And one thing I've been hearing, which I find interesting, I'm picking up a lot on people at trade shows, if they have almost life-size pictures of people wearing the product or wearing the jewelry or whatever, huge.
Yeah.
Really helps draw people into the booth.
Right. And if you're showing something these days that you can wear, whether it's dress it down, dress it up, and you wear things to in at different times, so you can wear it in different ways. And showing people these alternative ways of merchandising goods is also very important, because as we talked about, no trends mean people just don't know what to wear. And if you can help them merchandise a top that could be worn with a skirt or a pant or a, you know, short skirt or a long skirt, that really helps people identify what suits them. Mm-hmm. That's another way of doing it.
Have you noticed that a lot of designers, including myself, I felt the same way, but in the past, don't really understand how much normal people don't know what to wear?
Oh, like, yeah.
Like, I know. Right? I like know. Designers are like, it's so easy. You're like, oh, let me just put this together. And you take risks, or, you know, like as if a stylist would.
Right. And basically, that's what it's all about these days. It's almost, you know, you're not so much a designer these days, you're a stylist.
Yeah.
It's putting it all together. You're a merchandiser. You know, you're putting these pieces together that probably what's really new, Jane, in the trends. I was just looking at a whole page full of different pictures of street, what people are wearing on the streets. And there is no trend.
Yeah. You
know? It's all over the map. Yeah.
You can wear anything, really.
I'll tell you, as a retail buyer for 14 years, it is really annoying and hard if there's no trend.
Yeah.
You want to say, this is the jacket you need this season. You need leggings. You need this. You need that, because it's the thing.
Right.
When there's
what have we got now? What there's no thing that we need, is there?
Well, I mean, not really, right? Nobody's naked. But in the, at the same time, we want lots of stuff. So that's cool. But it's funny because when you're mentioning the steps, right? So first, you know, come on over, really understand try to get to understand the U.S. market as best you can. Drive around, walk in, start talking to people, walk the show before you sign up for something. It really takes a lot of extroverted effort to make something happen here rather than my collection is so great. If they just see it, they'll buy it.
Yeah. And you hear that so many times. And, you know, it's so, so true. The fact that, you know, I'll land in London and I'll go, wow, I know I'm in London. Okay. They're all wearing jeans and they're all wearing the same things they're wearing in California. But the way they put it together here or there is just a different look, the way they do it. It's the same when you go to Italy. You know, of course, the Italians have got a different way of merchandising themselves as opposed to, say, somebody from Chicago or New York. Mm-hmm. And that's what these days designers need to understand is what is it that people would buy, as we would say in Dallas or Miami, add some pink and bling and you're in that market then, you know, which nobody wears pink and bling in California or in Chicago, I wouldn't think.
No.
Whereas, you know, they do in Dallas and they love it. Anything pink with bling on it.
Bright colors.
Yeah.
Embellishments.
Yeah.
You are good to go if you've got that going on in Dallas. It's all good.
Yeah.
Okay. And so what about, is there any advice you could give someone who says, oh my gosh, so Jane, Francis, this sounds all great. And I'll take my $50,000 and try to enter the US market. Plus it's going to take a couple shows. Even if you just do this on your own, you do the show on your own. You may not find that distributor, that rep. You probably won't find them the first time. You probably have to keep coming back and doing the shows yourself. So it's a fairly large, long-term and large commitment, correct?
It is. And you know yourself, you see something once, it doesn't register. You've got to see something about 5 or 6 times before it really registers. And we say to people, even when we're talking to American brands, you want to go and show at Magic or any of the other shows, you need to be consistent. Stay in the same spot once you know where you belong, so that the buyers will come to realize, oh, I saw them last time and it was pretty cool. I'm going to stop by. So, you know, you've got that consistency within branding yourself is very important. Otherwise, you just don't register.
That is such a good point, and it's so true. And it's so easy to miss because, like, why not just go to a different spot for your booth this time? Try something new. No. The buyers are expecting you in a certain place.
Yeah.
And I don't know if people know this, but as a, you know, shopping those shows for 14 years when I had my retail store, you know, I'd be selling at Coterie, have my booth, and then I'd be like, hold on, I gotta go buy some sweaters and buy stuff for my store. You shop the show the same way every time. Mm-hmm. It's just like the grocery store. I don't think people go in and like, oh, today I'm going to start in the produce and tomorrow I'm going to start over there in the wine. No, you kind of shop the store the same way.
Right.
At least I do. So if you're mixing up and they don't know where to find you, that's going to be a problem. And if you don't have food or drinks or some little carrot to dangle in addition to your amazing product, that's kind of not a great idea either. You want to have, we used to joke as buyers, like I would start breakfast over at whatever, because I know they always have juice smoothies in their booth, and I would do lunch over by there because I know they bring it in. And so you plan your day shopping a market around the food.
It's true. I mean, that's as far as understanding the market too, I would say one more thing in advice is foreign labels coming in. Look at the name of your label. You know, with the Americans, if they can't say a foreign word, then they're not going to remember it. So think about your American market. And, you know, the anything French names, forget it. They'll never remember it. So thinking of any of these international brands entering the American market, they also need to think about getting the domain name over here as well. And, well, they've probably got it over in Denmark as well, so it should be okay. But you know, we've had African companies wanting to come and help them get into the American market. And honestly, Jane, the product is stuff that sells in Africa. It's never going to sell here. Mm-hmm. They're beautiful prints, but, you know, we're not going to be wearing turbans this season.
Right.
Things change. So you have to understand the market that you're addressing. It doesn't work otherwise.
And what would you say to somebody who says, gosh, I'm not going to have this big a budget. I still want to give it a try. I still want to do this, but I'm not going to have a budget to do magic for 3 shows in a row until I can expect some real action.
Is there maybe they could get online. Maybe they could get one of the stores online that they could be part of, you know, the Mod Cloths and some of the other online stores that they could maybe become a part of to grow.
And you guys, you talk to so many designers every day, every week. What are you seeing? What's coming? Like, you know, are we seeing more the people who want to sell in wholesale? Are you seeing more people who want to just go direct to consumer online? Is it everybody wants to do both right now, or what's the action?
We're seeing, yeah, we just had a group in this week, and I would say there is far more concentration within these groups of selling online and being specific to selling online and doing customization as well, which is, as you know, is becoming a big deal. Body scanning and making garments to fit one particular person. And it's very exciting, I think, actually, what's going on.
I love it. And I'm a big believer in, if you're selling online, you should be producing your own content in a blog or videos or whatever. And I've been preaching this for whatever, a number of years, and people's eyes just sort of have been glazing over. Like, I don't have time for a blog. I just want to design. I want to sell. And now they're like, yeah, you're right. I should do that. Okay. Like, they're getting it. Like, it's getting, I feel like I don't have to beat my head against a wall to convince somebody that having a blog for your business will help you sell more stuff. You know, it works.
And there's one more thing to do, Jane. It's just, oh, how much you've got, how much time it takes to do all this. It's amazing. I don't know how you've got all the time to do it, but it is exhausting. And, you know, when you look at one of the companies who we were all very proud of and started with the FBI, is Nasty Girl, who's just declared bankruptcy. So,
really?
Yeah. Oh, she had such an amazing model and a brilliant merchandiser and selling vintage tops and going down to the Korean mart and buying bottoms to go with it, putting Ray-Ban sunglasses together. But I think her heart was not, you know, I think she's still going to be very, very well off, but yeah. She's going into entertainment more, isn't she? Boss Girl, was it that? Was that the name of it?
Well, she wrote a book.
Yeah, and then they're doing a reality show based on that.
Yeah.
So I think she wants to go into entertainment. But her particular story is typical, I think, of what people need to think about when entering the market today, is understanding in total selling online, understanding your customer and helping them by merchandising the whole look, which is important.
Mm-hmm. I think you're absolutely right. If I had a dollar for every time somebody held up, I am not making this up, guys, a black turtleneck in my store and said, what should I wear? What do I wear with this?
Really?
Are you joking? Like, yeah. You know what? They like it on a silver platter. Here's the whole outfit. Buy now. It's great.
Yeah. So you become a sort of their styling consultant.
Yep, absolutely. And tell me about this, the customization aspect. That was really starting to pop before the recession. And then, you know, it didn't grow, I think, the way it would have if everybody didn't stop shopping at that time. So what's happening that can make it profitable? 3D printing is awesome, but what's going on with customization where you can actually make a living online? Do you have any ideas or thoughts on that topic?
Well, I mean, I just see where it's going. And we had another meeting the other day. This particular company here is moving, is creating a green production plant. And so they have a body scanner, so people can scan their body, and there's there's a virtual Jane on a keychain, and you can put it in your computer and try things on and see how they fit. Or you can have it, you know, Banana Republic's doing it, where you can find a jacket or a style of a pant, and then they will then put your customized avatar in and have the pattern adjusted to your body, and then it's shipped to you at the end of the week. Or like this particular company does have this body scanner, but they also have got this, they bought this $1 million robot, sewing machine robot, whole platform that can do a t-shirt in 7 seconds.
Oh my God.
So, oh, it's amazing. It's just absolutely. Wow. And it was made in America by a car plant, you know, these robot car plant manufacturers. So they made this robot t-shirt sewing machine. It's just incredible.
That is so cool.
Yeah, and it's they've done one on jeans too. So that's the next thing.
You know, so, I just saw a show on that or a, something about the jeans. You make them start to finish in 14 minutes and how it's made. My son and I, we love to watch How It's Made.
Yeah.
A whole like complete denim, like the real thing, grommets everything in 14 minutes.
My goodness. Yeah. Right? Yeah. But it's very interesting to see what is going on, but it's also a little scary for the retailers because you go in the retail stores or the malls, they're nearly dead. So, you know, who's buying? Are they buying only online? I mean, what's your experience?
Well, I owned a store for 14 years, so I do believe in the experience of shopping. At the same time, if I'm starting a company today, I would be all online. Maybe that's just my stage of life. I don't know. The online selling, it's going well for people. I think the combination of both is the ideal situation, even like a Bonobos, you know, mm-hmm. where they their stores are not stores. Their stores are showrooms. That's what I'm talking about because that's what I like because you don't have to stock the inventory. You don't have to sit around waiting for somebody to drop by and come in the 2-degree weather like today to actually make a purchase. So anybody today who's opening up a store has a store that's just shopping, I would really consider adding an experiential aspect to that store, services, you know, a cafe, like whatever you can do where people come in for a reason other than just shopping. Because if it's it's really going to be tough to sustain that, I think, as we move forward.
Well, what do you think about this whole new thing with athleisure wear, you know, athleisure wear, right?
Yeah.
So that's taking off. And then we were talking the other day with Sebastian from Pro Columbia, and they're making textiles that they're embedding in the textiles vitamins so that they will release to the body. You know, there are all these incredible new things that are going on that with textiles that is probably changing a great deal of the way people are thinking about manufacturing garments. And of course the lifestyle thing with that leisure.
I think it's really cool. I actually can't wait for all of it. I love it. I'm interested in virtual reality, the whole thing. I'm on it. I love it. What I'm wondering about is I think what is interesting is I think these technologies and these fabrics will be available for smaller companies too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I think it used to be like, we couldn't get our hands on that stuff, you know, mm-hmm. like, but now it's like this, you can get, you know, at the DG Expo fabric show in New York, you know, they have the kind of like, well, vegan leather pleather. When it gets hot, it changes color, things like that. And you can buy 10 yards and it's like so cool. You gotta watch how you use that. But like, if you make it in a jacket and you go outside, the shoulders turn a slightly different color in the sun. Even things like that are fun and different.
Yeah. I mean, and really, I know we're talking about entering the American market, but just as a sort of final side comment from me is that what we're seeing dealing with one of our directors who's Chinese is the demand for American products in China. So any of your people, they should really think about, you know, how can they enter the American, the Chinese market? There's some really interesting things going on there. They love to walk around with made in the USA on them instead of made in China. So
absolutely. And I have one guy I'm working with who does a baby product and it's higher end. It's really, really cool. And he can barely sell it here, but he sells a crap ton overseas.
Wow.
So, I mean, again, knowing your market, like he's selling all over the world, except hardly ever here. Like 2% of sales come from the US.
Amazing. Yeah, it is amazing.
Francis, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
I really enjoyed it.
Talking to you, Jane. Yeah, we look forward to seeing you. Hopefully, I know you'll see Trish in New York, but hopefully I'll see you soon. Are you going to Magic?
No, I am not.
Okay.
Not this time, but I know you guys do. So tell us, if somebody wants to get hold of you or they're interested in your books, what's the best place to find you guys?
Well, I have two websites. One of them is the Fashion Business Incorporated, which is fashionbiz.org. And then for my publications, fashionforprofit.com, which is fashionforprofit.com.
Or if anyone wants to call me here, the phone number here at the office is 213-892-1669.
Got it, baby. And I will put all of this in the show notes back over on the blog, fashionbrainacademy.com. Guys, thanks a ton. I really appreciate it. And thanks to everybody listening. We'll see you on the next episode and have an awesome day.
Thanks so much, Jane. Merry Christmas and all the rest.
Happy holidays.
Happy New Year.
Bye.
Okay.